Sorry for the delay there. When the wife is talking to you, you better give her your attention on all those things. Well, what did you think of the Thunderbird talk? I thought that was outstanding. Excellent, excellent. Tons of information that I had never heard before. And Dan is like, someone just told me, the Energizer Bunny. He's like on 24 volt, constantly going. Tonight, we were going to talk about how creation exalts the name of Jesus. But I looked over to the right. This is the biggest contingent of young people that I've had in a talk in probably 4 years. Really, really good. So it's great to see all of the young people over there in every way. Look at that. Even more young people are flooding in even as we talk. So I changed the talk. I think this was the Holy Spirit leading me. And tonight we're going to change to something different, aimed primarily at you guys. And it's called 5 Minutes with a Darwinist. 5 Minutes with a Darwinist, exposing the fluff of evolution. And this is a how-to talk. How-to for young people. How to share your faith, particularly as it relates to creation and evolution, with other people. Or, for the young people, your friend thinks they're related to a chimp. Now, what are you going to do? How are you going to address them? Your friend thinks they're related to a chimp, and you need, so this is aimed mainly towards young people, you need an effective way to talk with your friends about evolution. And probably nobody's ever given you a how to talk to your friends about evolution. Older people, you guys can hang in there too, because you have friends that also believe in evolution and those kinds of things. For the young people, we have a magazine that we have been giving away free for over 50 years. There's lots of articles, and there's a new series that's being geared up just for young people as they go off to high school and as they go off to college. And this is what it looks like. It's outstanding. It's not very thick. It's absolutely free. We have donors who give us money so that we can give it to you, the young people. Over there where my good wife is at that table, you sign up for that, and we will mail this to you absolutely free. It'll have articles that you can use. It has articles for older people as well. And this will keep you current. This will keep you current on those things related to creation evolution. In addition, these type of media, I'm not even sure exactly what every one of them are. I know what YouTube is because everybody has a YouTube. I'm not sure what that camera is on there, and I don't even know what that big looking P is on there. But nevertheless, we're on them. And I know that young people like being on those kinds of things. My slide is a little dated because the one with the T on it anymore evidently doesn't exist. But you can get rid of it and replace it with that, and you will be back on it. It's called X now. So you X out the T, and you're back on it for those. All right, 5 Minutes with a Darwinist. 5 Minutes with a Darwinist, exposing the fluff of evolution. This is made so people in Texas can even understand this. All right, fluff. It's going to have an F right there. Focus the discussion. You're only going to have 5 minutes, so you have to get down to business quick. Focus this discussion there. L, a new phrase to work into your vocabulary. Less than persuaded. Less than persuaded. U, unobserved important events. Just two of them. Not a lot, just two of those babies. F, failed mechanism for design on how all the creatures look so incredibly engineered. And then finally, F, the freedom found in creation science. Now, I notice some of the people have these pens, and they are writing furiously, furiously to get everything down. We will cover these many, many times, so you don't have to write your fingers to the bone. We will come right back to those. Or if you're kind of lazy like me, we have some of these booklets in the back. I think they're only $1. And if I would have been in high school and I had heard I don't have to write in exchange for $1, the buck would go out and I wouldn't be writing. So we have those things right there. All right, F, here it is. Hang in there. Focus the discussion. Focus the discussion. Why? Because your time is limited. You have to define your terms. We're talking about talking to your friends about evolution. You're going to be talking about those. So we're going to have to define those terms, and you want to use a reputable source. Because every now and then, somebody's going to come to you and say, well, where did you get that definition? How do you know that? So we want to use the terms. So the first term we need to define is evolution. Evolution. And we're going to go to the largest association of biologists in the world, the National Association of Biology Teachers. And they say that the diversity of life on Earth is the outcome of evolution. What a difference from what many people say, evolution is change or change over time. Young people, don't let evolutionists delude you to say that evolution is only change. Everybody believes they change. Look at these older people on this side of the room here. Have they changed over time? Yes, they have changed over time. Some of them look in the mirror this morning and they say, wow, have I changed over time? The thing is, young people, you will change over time as well. So, change over time. No, that's not right. Evolution is supposed to explain, get this down, the diversity of life on Earth. The diversity of life on Earth. Number two, the next thing we have to define is science. Everybody's got this. This is what we all learned in school. Science is based on observation and testing. It's a different way of knowing. It's not the only way of knowing. The Bible that's on your lap is a way of knowing. It's a revelation. It tells you the eyewitness account of those who were there. Science is another way of knowing. It's another way of knowing. It's not as good as the Bible, but it's based on the things we observe, the hypotheses we make, and the tests that we do. Science is based on observation and testing. Someone will say, well, where'd you get that definition? Well, you can say my teacher in third grade, but if you really needed a reputable source, the National Academy of Sciences. They wrote a book on creation evolution and these things, and they say that scientific investigators seek to understand the natural world by observation and experimentation. I just keep it simple for the Texans, and I just say testing, testing. Scientific interpretation of the facts and the explanations that account from them, therefore, must be testable by observation and experimentation. So, science is based on observation and testing. Tonight, since it's the last of the time, we have to have a little participation. So we'll have class participation here. This room, fortunately, divides really well. Boom, right down the middle here. This side versus this side. This side versus this side. Okay, older people in this room, besides my wife is on this side of the room. So for tonight, and tonight only, this side of the room gets to be the smart side. Smart side. Smart side over here. Okay, you guys, tonight and for tonight only, you are the dumb side. All right. Dumb side. Dumb side. All right, there you go. He wears the mantle with pride on those things. Smart side versus dumb side. Okay, smart side, smart side. Evolution is supposed to explain what? Smart side. Evolution is supposed to explain the? Man, oh man. Okay. All right, this isn't speaking in tongues. This is supposed to be unified speaking. Evolution is supposed to explain the diversity of life on Earth. All right, smart side. Okay, dumb side over here. Science is based on observation and? Testing, right up on the board, right there. Everybody can get that. Okay, science is based on observation and testing. Observation and testing. Now you know how the quiz is going to go. This is how the quiz is going to go, so you have to pay attention. You can even take notes. Look at that. Nobody over here has a pencil and paper. Look at these young people on that, on the dumb side, no less. Anyway, so, all right. L, Less than persuaded. Less than persuaded. That is a great phrase. If you can't remember it, remember the look of this woman on the screen. Does she look less than persuaded? Yes, she looks less than persuaded. In fact, I don't think men can even make a look like this on that. But women make this look all the time, all the time. Usually when something men are telling them, they make that look on those things. Less than persuaded. It's a good little phrase. It's not argumentative. And less than persuaded means you've been listening. You've been listening to what your teachers tell you. You've been listening to the television shows and those kinds of things. And you don't really want to avoid, you don't want to get into an argument. So you don't want to say, well, I just don't believe in evolution. You want to talk to your friends about creation evolution? Don't kick off the conversation with, well, I just don't believe in evolution. Because they're going to reply, well, then I just don't believe in creation. And pretty soon you're just completely deadlocked. You're not going anywhere. The conversation isn't advancing. You might as well be where? In Congress or something like that. Because you're not going anywhere. So you don't want to say this. Well, I just don't believe in evolution on that. Being less than persuaded means you've been carefully listening as well. And saying that you're less than persuaded means that you're willing to listen. You're willing to be convinced. And if you're willing to be convinced, then maybe the person you're talking to won't be so defensive, and they'll be willing to be convinced. And besides, you don't even want to begin with believe, because believe has this whole idea of maybe something that can be fanciful. I don't believe in Santa Claus. I don't believe in the tooth fairy, or something like that. Saying that you're less than persuaded on these things means that you've been listening carefully to what they've been telling you, but it isn't explaining the diversity of life on earth. Why? Because all they ever show you, and this is in your textbooks, I know it, when they're talking about evolution, they might show you a bunch of different types of dogs, or maybe different types of pigeons. But nowhere in your textbook, and you could say this even to your teachers, do they show you where dogs came from. Do they show you where pigeons came from? They show you changes in finch beaks, big beaks, small beaks, and I know that's in your books, but nowhere in your book do they show you where finches came from, and nowhere do they even show you where beaks came from. That would be an interesting question. Ask your teacher, where did the cells to make beaks come from? None of the textbooks ever tell us something like that. They show you changes in the numbers of moths, like dark moths compared to light moths, but now nowhere in your textbook do they tell you where moths come from. In fact, if you went to the fossil record, you would find moths showing up as moths in the fossil record, but there's no ancestor to those moths. On top of that, they'll show you similarities of body parts. They'll show you that a dog has a single bone in its upper arm, two bones in its lower arm, just like other creatures do. But nowhere in any of your textbooks, not even the college textbooks, will they tell you where bones come from. Do you realize the information in a bone, just to make a bone, is more than the entire information that it would take to run the city of Sacramento, the capital of California? I may not be saying much, but there's more information in a bone than there is to run that capital city. Who says that? Not just me. El País magazine in France. Ben Fringer, the Nobel Prize winner, said, there's more information in a single cell. It's more complex than an entire city. In a single cell, more information than an entire city. You're less than persuaded because they tell you about how bacteria become resistant to antibiotics, but they don't even tell you where bacteria come from. You realize the bacteria have been around for, according to their story, for over 3 billion years? Where do they even originate from? And they have more information than an entire city. You're less than persuaded because the main evidence that they're giving you in your textbooks to explain the diversity of life on Earth isn't explaining the diversity of life on Earth. It's explaining the varieties of life that's already existing on earth. And that's why you're less than persuaded. You're less than persuaded, and even this chimp isn't fully persuaded, because evolution, as you look through your textbook, relies on stories, a lot of speculation, tremendous computer animation, which is even getting more complicated with artificial intelligence. This is not evidence that's based on observation and testing, and this is what you've heard in the classroom, and this is what you constantly see on television. So this is why you are less than persuaded, because they haven't explained it to you. So you can be a little skeptical in your thinking, just like this little guy is skeptical. Man, does that kid look like they're less than persuaded? I can imagine. That's a newborn. Can you imagine raising that kid for the next 18 years? They come out of the womb looking like that? You're less than persuaded because it doesn't meet your criteria of science, which is based on what? Observation and testing. All right. Next topic, which means it's quiz time. Quiz time. All right. Smart side. Evolution is supposed to explain the? All right. We'll give that a second shot. Let's hear it with one resounding voice. Smart side. Evolution is supposed to explain the?
Diversity of life on Earth.
Dumb side. Science is based on?
And testing.
Smart side. What phrase do you want to work out of your vocabulary? You don't want to start your conversation? That's right. So I thought that came out all right. I don't believe in evolution. I don't believe in evolution. You don't want to start like that. You don't want to say, I just don't believe. I don't believe in evolution. Dumb side. What cool phrase do you want to work into your vocabulary that you can say with your friends? I've been listening to my teachers, but I am? All right. That was pretty good. Less than persuaded. Don't use that on your parents. You can only use it on your friends when you're talking about evolution. You can't come up to your mom and dad and say, well, I heard what you said, but I'm less than persuaded. But you can say it with your friends. You're less than persuaded. Less than persuaded. Less than persuaded because of some unobserved important events. There's going to be two of them. Which means there'll be what? Two quiz questions. All right. Unobserved important event number one. An unobserved origin, an unobserved natural origin. Dumb side. An unobserved natural origin of life. Nobody's seen it happen. Nobody's even close to duplicating it. And nobody can explain it. Nobody. Not at the UC San Francisco, not at Stanford, not at UC Berkeley, not at UC Santa Barbara, San Diego, Irvine, or any of them. Nobody is close to it. In order to explain the origin of life, you have to explain the origin of metabolism, growth, adaptation, and reproduction. Nobody's even close to explaining any of those things on that. In fact, more than almost 20 years ago, a paper came out that said, don't tell the creationists, but scientists don't have a clue of how life began. And he said 20 years before that, he had the same title to his article, but his editor wouldn't let him send it out. And I predict 20 years from now, nobody is going to have a clue on this. And you can say to your friends with absolute confidence, there is not a scientific paper published anywhere on this planet that documents a natural origin of life. Natural origin of life. Okay, smart side. I'm kind of telling you what your quiz question is going to be. Unobserved, important event number two. A mechanism that can change one creature to a fundamentally different kind of creature. Not a diversity of dogs, but something that can change one creature into another. We're not after this. Big variety of dog, you know, the smart dog and the dumb dog there on all those things on that. We're looking at something that is completely different, a mechanism that can change one creature to a fundamentally different kind of creature. You know, everybody touts evolution. And in 2009, it was the 200th anniversary of the birth of Charles Darwin. And this paper came out with a celebration of it. Look what it says. Evolution in action. A 50,000 generation salute to Charles Darwin. And this was reporting on, at the time, the world's oldest and longest running experiment on evolution. They took the bacteria that live in your gut, called E. coli, and they would grow them for a day, and they would reproduce. And then they would take 10% of those and freeze them, destroy the other 90%, let those 10%, the ones that weren't frozen, reproduce, do that for another day, and they went on generation after generation after generation. In fact, the experiment went on for almost 80,000 generations, but at the time they reported this, they were up to 50,000 generations. They said this was a salute to Charles Darwin, and I can't understand why. Because after 50,000 generations of E. coli bacteria, guess what it still was? E. coli bacteria. Hadn't changed at all. Wasn't anything different. Not anything close to it. But evolution is not supposed to explain 50,000 generations of the same thing. Evolution is supposed to explain the what? Diversity of life on earth. The diversity of life on earth. Okay, takes us to number F, failed mechanism. Quiz time. Let's start over here. Dumb side. Evolution is supposed to explain the? Threw you a loop, huh? Gave you a new question. Evolution is supposed to explain the diversity of life on earth. Smart side. Science is based on? Observation and testing. Observation and testing. What phrase do you want to work into your vocabulary so you don't get into an argument? You want to say you've been listening but are less than persuaded. Less than persuaded. Less than persuaded because of two important events. Two important events. Number one is a natural origin of what? Life. Life. All right. Smart side. Smart side. The other unobserved important event is a? Yeah, that was it. Let's run that again. A mechanism that can change one creature to a fundamentally different kind of creature. Natural origin of life, changing one creature to a different kind of creature on all of those things. All right. This is the hardest one to get. Hardest one to get. Failed mechanism for design. Why is that? That's because when scientists, whether they're evolutionists or creationists, when they look at creatures, they realize that creatures look like they're highly engineered. Highly engineered. Birds look like they're engineered to fly. Fish look like they're engineered to swim. People look highly engineered to do all the athletic things that we do on all of that. Creationists state the reason why we look highly engineered is because we were engineered. We've got the easier sell. Most people want to believe that you look engineered because you are engineered. Evolutionists actually have the harder job. They have the harder job. They have to state that you only look like you're engineered, but you really weren't engineered. That there's a natural process which can make you look like you're engineered, but you really weren't. The thing is, almost everybody grows up with this intuition that when they look at creatures, they look like they're engineered. And a study was done over 20 years ago that looked at children between the ages of 6 and 10 across all different cultures in different countries all around the world. And they found out that for the vast majority of children, if you gave a child between the ages of 6 and 10, if you gave them something like a cat or a dog, and you said to these children, where did this dog come from? You know what children will naturally say? God made it. God made it. Children naturally go that way. They see it, they think, God made this. And it takes about 12 years of evolutionary teaching in school to get that thinking out of their mind and replace it with, it evolved from something else. So the natural tendency is to say that God made this. And so evolutionists have the harder job. They have to say that evolution is based on, of all things, random genetic mutations, mistakes. Tell me how crazy that is. All of the things about you are based on genetic copying errors, genetic mistakes of one type or another, and then they get weeded out by natural selection, some mystical process. Well, first of all, it's not even true. That's not going to happen. And nobody wants to have random genetic mistakes. Nobody wants to have them. You want to avoid them. When you go to the dentist and they're going to x-ray your teeth, there's usually a lab technician who comes out. What's the lab technician carrying when they come out to x-ray your teeth? They're carrying a lead apron. They're carrying a lead apron. And they usually take that lead apron and they throw it across your lap. Why do they do that? They do that because when they x-ray your teeth, they don't want to scatter the x-rays and x-ray your gonads. Nobody wants their gonads x-rayed on that. It ruins your day on there. And the reason why you don't want to do that is because there'll be eggs or sperm, and nobody wants to damage the DNA that's in it. You don't want to break it. You don't want to break your germ cells. And so they come out and they cover you with a lead apron. But evolutionists say this is the mechanism that led to all the diversity of life on Earth. Utterly crazy. Nobody does that. And then when it comes to natural selection, all you have to say to your friends is, well, when they say natural selection did it, well, show me the selector. Show me the selector. Where is this selector in nature that's selecting for things? And they'll say, well, that's just a figure of speech. There really isn't a real selector. And then you say, well, real selectors can't really design things. So your whole explanation for the diversity of life on Earth are broken genes, copying errors, mistakes by the millions that get fractioned out by a selective force where you can't even show me what the selector is? Tell me how logical that is. And the Bible says that when people reject God as creator, it says they profess themselves to be wise, but they become fools. And this is a foolish explanation. It's a foolish explanation. It's only because it's the only one going that is against God that anybody even gives us credence. If there was something better, I guarantee you they dumped us in a heartbeat because this is so, so ridiculous. And that's what they are going to explain why birds can fly and fish can swim and all of these things. We have a much better explanation that these organisms were highly engineered by the Lord Jesus Christ, who is an incredibly wise and smart and powerful engineer who can put things together that conform to the patterns of design, which show multiple parts working together for a purpose, just like the cars out there in the parking lot, just like the little clicker in my hand. All of these things show evidence of design, multiple parts working together for a purpose. That is a pattern of design. In addition to that, the complexity of these things, your car, is so complex that nobody would think it could ever come about through random processes or even tinkering by real human beings. Nobody would see that. And as I already mentioned, the complexity of even a single cell, exceeds that of cities. So the complexity is mind-bogglingly complex. When you young people go off to college, and some of you will become biologists, and some of you will go to medical school like I did, You will start to study stuff and you will dig into your text and you'll be like, wow, how am I ever going to learn all this stuff? How am I ever going to memorize all this stuff? Because the complexity will be off the charts. And even if you go to medical school, you'll just be scratching the surface. And then you'll go on to have develop a specialty and you'll learn more. And then you'll develop a subspecialty and you'll learn even more. And you'll be astounded, utterly astounded, more than you can explain to most other people, just how incredibly complex biology is. It is phenomenally complex. Do you know your DNA is a code? Tell me how cool this code is. The code can be read in one direction and it makes sense. And then you can read it in the opposite direction and it makes sense. You can read it skipping every third or fourth word and it makes sense. You can read it back skipping and it makes sense. You can fold it up and the shape itself makes sense. All of these things are conveying information, which is on a level that nobody can even comprehend. This is what's awaiting you when you go off to college. This is incredible. And then finally, you have all or nothing unity, which means unless all of the parts are there and working together at the right place, at the right time, at the right amount, nothing is going to work. Your friends will say to you, well, what's an example of that? Just say human reproduction. Human reproduction, everybody has to learn about it in school. You need all of the parts, mom's parts, dad's parts, even baby's parts. They all have to be working together at the right time, right amount. Baby's going to be running the show inside of mom, taking over. Baby's going to be building itself. Baby's going to be taking all the resources from mom that it can get. Baby's going to tell mom when the baby needs to be born, and baby's going to kick everything off. All of this needs to happen, or baby doesn't even come about. Then if there isn't a baby, then that brings a halt to evolution. It comes to an end. All or nothing unity. So, you can say to your friends, I am persuaded when the two mechanisms are put together in a head-to-head test, this logical explanation beats random mutations any day of the week. And of course, a head-to-head test gives me a chance to be the proud father who can brag on their son. That is my son right there, number 30, in a head-to-head collision with the crosstown rival, stopping that dude right before the goal line. And this picture was on the front page of the newspaper on that. This hit that my son put on him was so hard and it was so loud. You could hear it for about a half mile away. It was just phenomenal on those things, on that. So it's just an incredible kind of thing that you can kind of do. Finally, freedom found in creation science. This kind of freedom. A freedom that allow you to detail some cool things to your friends about all aspects of creation science. So if you guys, some of you are going to go into the scientific fields, you will like the freedom to follow the evidence wherever it leads. And creationists can follow the evidence wherever it leads. I'm not afraid of where the evidence is going to go scientifically, but evolutionists aren't that way. They're committed to a worldview called materialism. And back in the 1990s, there was a big debate in the state of Kansas over teaching creation or evolution. And this gentleman, Scott Todd, said in the world's leading scientific journal, Nature, even if all the data point to an intelligent designer, such a hypothesis is excluded from science because it's not naturalistic. Tell me, does that make any sense? Even if all the data pointed to it, you're going to exclude it? I mean, what other field of science does it do that? When I was an engineer, I never said, well, all the data indicate that these beams up here aren't going to hold the load, but I'm going to build it anyway. As a medical doctor, I never said, all the data, all your tests, all my observations, all the imaging studies, they indicate you've got this disease, but I don't believe it. Nobody does that. But in the evolutionary worldview, if all the data point to it, they exclude it. Number two, here's another really cool freedom. Freedom from the magic words. Magic words which pervade evolutionary literature. So young people, here you go. Now, as you read your textbook, 10th grade biology, or whether you go off to college on these things, or if you're listening to Nova, or if you're listening to National Geographic, or if you're listening to any of these television programs, listen for the words that are up on the screen. These are magical words. Words like arose. These creatures arose over millions of years. Emerged. After 10 to 15 million years, this thing emerged. Appeared. Gave rise to. Burst onto the scene. Every one of the ones that you see up on the screen, I have taken from evolutionary literature. Scientific literature. These words are there, and they're magical words because they're covering over a lot of missing data. And when the data is missing, evolutionists throw these kinds of words into their stories. This thing arose, it emerged, it burst onto the scene, and those kinds of things. You know what I'd love to do? At our book table, I'd love to have like a little clicker thing I had when I was a kid. It was a piece of metal that was on a thing, and you pushed on it, made a click, 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 click sound. I'd like to put all of these words on the back of the clicker. And we'd give these clickers away to all the young people. You had it. And then your kids could listen to the show. And moms, you could have like a competition of your kids. Listen carefully to the show. And when you hear these words, push the clicker. Clicker. You know, moms, you could maybe have a competition between smart kid versus dumb kid or something like that. You know, maybe do that. And this would teach them to listen carefully to these kinds of things. So here's something from a college level text. See if you can see any magic words. I took this from a college level text. 4 billion years ago, some congeries of molecules danced. Say click every time you find a magical word here. Danced, blindly catalyzing one another's formation, reaching a critical diversity at which self-sustaining webs of reactions emerged and formed life. Blind interactions gave rise to the emergent phenomenon of cellular life. Cells linked in metabolic exchanges, blindly creating the first ecosystems. Those ecosystems have unfolded over billions of years, unfolded. I didn't put that one on the screen. I missed it. With profusions of species emerging, passing into extinction, at each level we sense emergent lawfulness in the profusion. Wow. I mean, you almost have to be on drugs to listen to this stuff. And yet, at the best colleges in this state, students are soaking this up. And then they come home after their first semester and they say, Mom and Dad, I no longer believe the Bible because it's been replaced with this. It's been replaced with this. Young people, these people love you enough to get you here to arm you so that you don't fall for this stuff. You don't fall for this stuff there. Finally, freedom from the many religious conclusions masquerading as science. Everybody, particularly the older people, remember this guy, Carl Sagan. He's dead now. But he wrote a book called Cosmos, and there was a TV show, Cosmos. And he says this. This is how he begins his book. The cosmos is all that is or ever was or ever will be. Now, that sounds really science-y. The cosmos. And Neil deGrasse Tyson and others will come on the screen and they'll say stuff like this. The cosmos is all that ever is or was or ever will be. And you want to argue with them. You want to say, what? Don't argue. Don't argue. The best way to respond to science-y people who are trying to sell you something as science, but it sounds like this, is just ask them, what experiment did you do And what paper did you publish it in? So if Carl Sagan was still alive and he said this, I would say, Dr. Sagan, I'd say Dr. Sagan because I'd show him respect. Dr. Sagan, you said the cosmos is all it is, ever was, or ever will be. How did you test that with an experiment? Huh. How would you test that? Can any of you conceive of an experiment that would test it? How long would the experiment be going? Long? Forever. He says it ever will be. So you couldn't even do an experiment to test this. Nobody could do an experiment to test this. You know what this is? This is Carl Sagan's religious belief being dressed up to sound like it's science. It's his religious belief made to sound like it's science. So young people, be on the lookout for that. Here's another one. Michael Shermer says this, speaking of Richard Dawkins. In one of the most existentially penetrating statements ever made by a scientist, Richard Dawkins concluded that the universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil and no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Dr. Dawkins, what experiment did you do to show that there was no evil, no good, no purpose? He never did. You can't do an experiment to show those things. This is Richard Dawkins' religious beliefs wrapped up to sound like it's science. How many of you heard of this guy, Stephen Hawking? He was reported to be the smartest man or one of the smartest men on the planet. He's now dead. But look what he says. Stephen Hawking says, there is no heaven. There is no heaven. Stephen Hawking's going to complain, going to compare your brain to a computer, and he says this. Stephen Hawking, the world-renowned theoretical physicist, finds no room for heaven in his vision of the cosmos. The 69-year-old, this was before he passed away, says, there is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. He's talking about your brain when it dies. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. He's talking about you guys. You're Christians. You hold to this idea of an afterlife because you're afraid to die. That's what he's saying. You're afraid of the dark. You're afraid to die. So you've made up, you've concocted this whole story about heaven because you're afraid to die, but he declares there is no heaven. Now, if Dr. Hawking was still alive, I'd say, Dr. Hawking, you said there's no heaven. What experiment did you do to show there was no heaven? Did he do an experiment? No. How would you even do the experiment? First thing you'd have to what? Die. You got to get there. No heaven. And then you got to do what? You got to come back. And you got to tell all your friends. No heaven. You see, this is how crazy these things are. Young people, don't be persuaded just because of someone's reputation. Listen carefully to what they're saying. Does this even make any sense? Or is this Stephen Hawking's religious view? Maybe we're not the ones who are afraid to die. Maybe Stephen Hawking is afraid to die and meet his maker. Maybe that's why he's saying there is no heaven. Did you ever think about that? Maybe he has a religious conviction. So if we had 5 minutes to talk with Stephen Hawking, you would get that book. If you have just some time, this book right here. This book is like a textbook. It's like a reference book that has the things we're talking about in it. Creation Basics and Beyond. It would be a useful resource for discussing this fluff of evolution. And if you really want to get up to speed and you really care about knowing about these kinds of things, sign up for this magazine. So you want to do what? If you have 5 minutes, focus the discussion, less than persuaded. Two unobserved important events, natural origin of life, mechanism to change one creature to a fundamentally kind, failed mechanism to explain why creatures look so highly engineered, and the freedom, freedom from magic words and all of these other kinds of things. So that's a quick way to organize your thoughts, to talk to your friends about creation and evolution. So, Pastor, that was the training session. Thank you so very much for being invited tonight, and I appreciate you for that.